You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married. Well, you know how they had Trump trains all over the country?
I remember. I was in it.
Now they have Stop the Steal trains around the country. And I mean, the lines are amazingly long. People out saying, stop the steal.
You know, I've been watching the videos of that, and I'm really happy that they have that. But I'm going to chastise you because I thought we had an agreement when we started this show that we were going to start this show with Aloha from Hawaii special edition Talking While Married. And you let me down.
Well, it was a one-sided agreement. I never agreed. But Aloha from Hawaii and another place that's pretty much locked down in the country. And we will talk about that in a few minutes. So I want to talk about something a little more important, which is Stop the Steal. It's still, oh gosh, we're still in this fraud situation with the election. Things happen every day. It's interesting to keep up with and hard to keep up with if you have a life other than looking at the news all day long. Sidney Powell was on Malcolm Out Loud's show on this network, America Out Loud.
That's a big coup, by the way, for Malcolm to get Sidney Powell on his show.
Well, I mean, he's an absolutely amazing interviewer. And if people haven't heard it, it was on The View. And I believe you can probably get the recording on podcast. But here's the thing. She's so articulate and she lays out her case as to the problems with the Dominion voting machines. It's really, really fascinating to me. And then he had on, and I'm sorry, I don't know his name, but he's been on the news a lot, a data analyst. And this is what is so fascinating to me, Ron. In Nevada, and by the way, they've done it in all of the swing states, but I'm talking about Nevada right now. In Nevada, people that voted, say they had multiple ballots, mail-in ballots come from an address. They went and they door knocked on these homes.
Did a knock and talk.
They did. And they said, hi, I'm from the election committee. And we just want to know how your experience went with the mail-in ballots. And some of the things that they learned were absolutely atrocious. They will, you know, every American should be concerned. So I'll give you a couple of examples. One example is a family said, oh, well, it went great. My daughter did everything that you guys told her to do. She got all of her friends to go and pick up all of the ballots out of the mailboxes of the elderly people at the nursing homes and fill them out for Joe Biden and mail them in. And I mean, these data people are in shock. And the people in the house don't know that because they never say, they don't say what party they're with, they're just with the election team. So people assume where they're from. So they actually were invited in and they took an affidavit and all of that. And they found out that this is what happened. And they have an affidavit to that effect. There was another case where they went and a man answered the door. And he said, well, you know, it went okay. My granddaughter, you know, but I'm a little bit concerned about my granddaughter. And he was kind of hesitant. So the team said, here's our card. If you want to chat with us, then please give me a call. And he did give a call. And he said, you know, I don't want my granddaughter to go to jail. But what was happening was after the election, there was thousands of college students at Martin Luther King Center in Las Vegas, And they were all filling ballots in for Joe Biden after the fact so that they had them to corroborate, you know, the numbers that they came up with.
After the election.
After the election. And that was is all on videotape and it's all documented and signed. These are just two examples of many, many frauds that they found in Las Vegas. You multiply this by all of the swing states where they are doing door knocks everywhere. And there's just so much fraud in the election. And whether or not it becomes a case where Biden is out and Trump is in, I've said, and I'll keep saying, probably a bridge too far at this point because of time. But it should be the case. If based on Sidney Powell, based on the people that are doing all of the investigations, based on all the people that have come forward, there was so much fraud in these six swing states. It should make every American angry. And it shouldn't make any American that's Democrat and that's happy that Trump is out, happy that this happened in our country, because believe me, it can turn around and happen the other way as well.
Well, you know, old Dr. Ron here is a forensic facts guy. And I'm a very, you know, practical minded, you know, person, very objective oriented. And I got to tell you, the more that I hear about this election fraud on so many different levels, the more I am convinced rather than not convinced, the more, as we say in the old police business, the more my suspicions are enhanced rather than diminished that we have election fraud on a number of different levels. And, you know, you started this conversation and you mentioned about the Dominion software election machines. And I just saw today on a news story that a number of these critical machines that they wanted to look at have so-called crashed. So, I mean, what does that tell? I mean, what are, you know, cops hate coincidences, right? How many times have you and I said that? Come on. How many coincidences could there possibly be? They're going to snag these machines and all of a sudden the machines are reported to have crashed where they may not be able to retrieve any data whatsoever. And I'm going to tell you what, and we were talking about this today out in the swimming pool, and that is that especially in Georgia, if they had a mind to snag those machines, then the attorney general office in Georgia, who is in charge of the GBI, the Georgia Bureau of Investigations, and I've had cases involving these people, they should have gone out and put the habeas gravis on those Dominion voting machines right away. They should have gone out there. They should have confiscated with warrants. They should have confiscated those machines. They should have put them into a locked controlled warehouse until all of the court decisions are made or whatever, or Trump is going to pay, you know, how many millions of dollars to do a valid voter count. And then they have to have clearly independent people there and forensic download experts like we have in our company to be able to retrieve all that information. That's the only way you are going to convince me that and that these machines were not tampered with whatsoever. I'm very suspicious of these machines.
Well, my thought was that what happened when the machines crashed, that a judge said that you may not go in and try to fix it because he was concerned about them erasing things. So he's leaving them that way so that they can recover information.
I do believe, you know, based on our people, okay, based on our forensic computer experts, and that's what they do for a living. You know, people try to delete things all the time. They try to, you know, mess with them, change the data. And our guys, believe me, there is a digital footprint, fingerprint, every time you mess with a computer. Okay?
Well,
and that's what they're paid to do.
So there is a judge, Timothy Batten. He's from Georgia, but he has halted and ordered some of the machines to be inspected in Georgia. And I think that that's going even further. I think that we're making headway in Georgia. The issue is we have to make headway in a whole lot of places to make a difference.
Exactly.
And I know that there's another Wisconsin lawsuit coming, And Pennsylvania, we are making some headway in as well. So, you know, but it's still a very, very far bridge. And I just don't think it's going to go. Here's the other thing, Ron. This was Democratic fraud. You did not see this on the Republican side. You did not see false votes and questions. Nobody's questioning anything on the Republican side.
No, you know, it's interesting. And there was an article that came out today that you and I were sharing, and every single scam that was going on, people getting, you know, these are called third party organizations, and they are trying to grab people from other states and bring them into Georgia to vote. That's fraud. They were trying to get them to register in Georgia and then afterwards unregister, you know, go back, especially college students. They
right.
were really encouraging this. And there was like four or five third party organizations, and every single one of them were Democratic organizations.
And okay. they're mailing ballots to people in New York and exactly. all different states. This is crazy.
Right.
So again, it wasn't enough that they have had all the fraud that they did. And like I said, all of the fraud is on the Democratic side, all of it. Now, with the election coming in January for the two Senate seats, they are doing it again. And they're boldly, brazenly doing it again. Who has enough cojones to stop them? Who is it? Because I just see the judges in these matters as being impotent. And I see them as being partisan. And I don't see that anybody has the huevos in life to get up and take a stand here, other than, I mean, I've got to hand it to a few people in the Republican Party, like Sidney Powell, who are really trying to make a difference and are doing the legwork and doing the homework. And these data people are doing that.
Well, you know, Linda, well, I think if you can make an argument that exigent circumstances do exist, and I certainly believe they do. Okay. That means that, you know, the courts have to act in a expeditious manner to clear up all of this controversy. And I think the exigency is, hey, we're coming up to January 20th, and we've got to figure out who the heck our president of the United States is going to be, because I believe there are some other congressional, you know, laws and everything that come into place that will take Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House and automatically make her the president of the United States.
Well, okay. We're going to have the Electoral College seat the president long before January 20th, as far as once they vote who the president is, that's what it's going to be.
But don't you think there need, and there will, I don't think there'll ever be closure, but don't you think that there needs to be some sort of preliminary closure where we can prove one way or another whether or not this election was rigged? Because I'm telling you, I'm like you, every single thing that I see points towards systemic, huge election fraud. But as we've talked about, you know, during two or three of our coffee conversations, we have to make a wholesale argument and have wholesale objective evidence and not retail. You know, we have to have tens of thousands of votes being changed or fraudulently placed instead of, well, there's 25 here, there's 100, there's 500, there's 1,000. You got to have the big numbers. Okay.
Well, I think that this investigation will go on long after a president is seated. And I think it has to, for the benefit of the country, because a conclusion has to be brought forward to the American people as to what happened in this election for real, because it's the only way that we are going to get changes made. Because if we don't do that, Ron, the Democrats are emboldened that their plan worked, and they will use it on every election, and the Republicans will never stand a chance, not because America doesn't want them, but because they're cheated out of their president, just like they were this time. So this has to go on. And I'd like to have a whole nother coffee conversation with you on changes that need to be made in our entire electoral process.
And I'm happy to do that with you. And we'll snag a cup of coffee in just a second. But, you know, one of the things that I want to say is, with this Senate election coming up in Georgia, they can't use these voting machines. OK, they can't do these mail in ballots again.
But they are.
Oh, my God.
I don't know about the voting machines. I assume that they're using them. But they all of the same things are in place for the same type of fraud. So here we go again.
We can't have these mail-in ballots, for God's sakes. Okay. I mean, this has to stop. I don't want to steal your thunder later, because I know you want to talk about these things. But I'll tell you what, I will never trust another election again. And I don't think I'm by myself. I think that I'm hearing a lot of other Americans, a lot of our friends and followers, and people that are very intelligent people that we associate with on a day-to-day basis, they're all pretty much saying the same thing. And I think, you know, unless you are completely blind and naive as a Democrat, you got to be thinking the same thing yourself. How can you possibly trust the elections the way they're being run right now?
I guess that people think that if it's going their way, they're not going to worry about it. I think that the Supreme Court should order that only people in Georgia that were registered voters as of November 3rd may vote in the January 5th election.
Oh, that, you know, I don't think anybody's ever said that. And I absolutely agree with what you're saying.
That will stop all of these games with sending out more fraudulent ballots, and also with having people move in, move out, and say that they live there.
Okay, now listen, I'm not a constitutional scholar here, I'm not a legal scholar, I'm just a guy. But I don't know if the Supreme Court or the people that make, they can make a ruling, but you're talking about a directive, you're talking about an order. That is going to have to, a ruling is going to have to be a strongly worded suggestion to the governor, because it's a state issue. It's a federal issue, but it's a state issue because they're voting in that state. They're voting for federal offices in a state venue. And I think, you know, somebody has to give word to the governor, whether it's a directive or whatever. And I'm fine with the courts doing it, but they have to tell the governor, hey, look, exactly what you said. Yeah. Nobody that's registered to vote prior to November 3rd can vote.
Nobody that's not registered.
No, that's not registered
okay.
to vote.
I actually don't think that would be legal, only because you can't change election rules within so many days of an election.
No, and I think you're right,
But it's still, something needs to be done to prevent what exactly the kind of fraud that is right in front of all of our faces again. So it wasn't enough that they did it for the presidential election. Now they want the Senate as well, and they want to steal that as well. Interesting that they feel that they have to steal it. They can't win it outright fairly.
No, I think Trump is just too popular for them to win it outright.
I'll make you a quick cup of coffee.
That sounds good. A Kona coffee.
Oh, you got it.
Aloha.
My fellow Americans, our mission here at AmericaOutloud.com is clear. We're here to defend our founding values and principles at a moment when they are under unprecedented assault. And to cover the news objectively and offer intelligent commentary on the challenges we face as a nation. You can tune in and join our family of listeners 24/7 in this vital crusade. Our apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa. Find us on iHeartRadio or our world-class media player. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist, death investigator, and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. Are you a fan of CSI shows and documentaries? Are you fascinated with how death investigators like me solve high-profile death cases like you see on the news? If so, then I encourage you to join me as I unpack some of the most high-profile police and civilian-involved death cases in my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. Read all about the forensic evidence you never heard on the evening news. You can get a copy of my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, today by ordering it on my forensic site at www.dronmartinelli.com. DronMartinelli.com. And remember, without truth, there is no justice.
One of my least favorite congresspeople is Ilhan Omar, and she just never fails to insult. And, you know, she is totally for the defunding of the Minneapolis Police Department. And she's telling people, she's putting out on Twitter, which is so interesting because she does not get blocked on Twitter. She's telling people not to fall for the fear-driven narratives and that they can craft a justice system that prioritizes people's basic needs like mental health and violence prevention and allow the city to put public safety first. She could not be more wrong. She does not know what she's talking about. She is an ignorant woman. And what they've done in Minneapolis, Ilhan, is they have defunded the police a percentage previously, and they have lost a number of their officers, and they have officers leaving and retiring also just because of the environment that they're working in. But also, now they want to defund them from 888, which is what the city wants.
You're talking about 888 officers?
Yeah, down to 750. And she thinks that saving this money can be put into other places that are better. In the meantime, they have had 500 shootings in Minneapolis, which is a huge increase from previous. They have had over 5,000 violent crimes in Minneapolis, which is a huge increase over anything that they've had in a number of years. And at that time, you want to remove officers. This makes no sense to me.
Well, you know, that's exactly right. And I think the amount that she is personally suggesting that the city removed from the budget of the Minneapolis Police Department is over $8 million. And you're absolutely right. I mean, we had a conversation not too long ago, Linda, where I was talking about six of the major cities mm-hmm. in the United States. And I think there was four of the six cities are all doing defunding right now. And their crime stats, their violent crime stats, and their homicide stats were through the roof. And Minneapolis and St. Paul and also Milwaukee, Wisconsin were way up into the high double digits.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would ask the people in her district, why on earth would you elect somebody like this to represent you and have you live in this type of a fear-filled environment? She is not doing anything to help you. In fact, she's going to be making your life much worse.
Well, you know, the thing that I don't understand about this, because in her district, first of all, her district is packed with refugees. Okay.
Yeah, it's a very, very small geographical area.
It is, but it's packed with Somali refugees. And if you want to talk about the crime rates in Somalia, they're like some of the very worst violent rate, you know, rates of violence in the entire world. And to them, living in the United States is a significant reduction from the levels of violence that they saw, you know, in Somalia. And a lot of these people are on, you know, welfare, government subsidized housing, you know, a lot of things like that. And they vote for her just like people vote for Maxine Waters, who's a Marxist, for God's sakes, and has done nothing for her district. Omar has done nothing for her district, and Maxine Waters has done nothing for her district, but they do bring home the bacon with regards to keeping the welfare rolling into those communities. So those people blindly follow Omar, plus they are of the same cultural background as Omar. And people, and I don't care, you know, what color, what race, what religion you are, people tend to resonate with people that are just like them. It doesn't mean that anybody from any color, any race, any religion, any culture is all that smart, okay? But that's just the way the human nature is, and they are forced to live in such a violent environment, but then again, not anywhere near as violent as the country that they came from, which is Somalia.
When you could have it so much better, why would you choose purposefully not to?
Because I'm not sure, Linda, that they even know it's any better anywhere else. You know, they come in. I mean, come on, look at immigrant families. I'm going to talk about my family briefly on my mother's side, where you know, who everybody's all passed away now. But I clearly remember as a child, and even as a young police officer, when my grandmother on my mom's side, who was right off the boat. Okay. She stayed in her Italian community her entire life. She learned very little English. She could not write English, could not read English. And she stayed within a 10-mile radius of her Italian community, whether it was in Italy or whether it was in the United States when she came here. That's just the way some people are.
Well, I guess so. I just would say to the people of Minneapolis, and it's not just her district because there's more districts there. So I'll speak to the other districts, and you need to not be in favor of reducing your police force because you're just going to have more problems there. And I mean, if you want to give the police extra training, you want to teach them how to de-escalate, do whatever it takes, but you cannot have no police out there protecting you.
Okay. I'm going to go back to the cultural thing based on my own experience as a police officer.
But everybody in Minneapolis is not from Somalia. That's her district.
No. So I know. I totally get it. No. And I'm not trying to suggest that. I'm going with what you're saying, Linda. And that is, her district is a relatively small geographic area. But you would have to agree with me because we've looked at the demographics. It's very large Somali, you know, former and current refugee population. I remember when I worked as a police officer in the city of San Jose, and I had worked gangs for many years, and then I moved my assignment into the Southeast Asian community. So I was dealing with Vietnamese, Laotians, Cambodians, Hmongs. And in those communities, especially in the Vietnamese community, and I'm going back a few years, but in those days, which was right after the Vietnam War, police were corrupt in Vietnam, very corrupt in Vietnam. And they were and plainclothes police officers, and that's what I was. I was a plainclothes. I was a detective. Those people were usually associated with the CIA. Okay. So nobody was trusted. And to get the trust of the Vietnamese community to cooperate with the police, even talk to the police, I have to tell you, it was a monumental challenge, and I couldn't speak Vietnamese, and except for a few phrases. But that's the way. Just take that situation and multiply it by many cultures and many backgrounds, many nationalities in the United States. Refugees coming in contact for the first time with law enforcement, they're completely distrustful of law enforcement and they're ignorant. I don't mean, and I don't say that in an offensive or demeaning mean, it means they're just not educated about American law enforcement and that, hey, we're the good guys. All right.
Well, and then you have a congressperson who is
manipulates them.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And not telling the truth.
Exactly.
And that,
but they don't know any better.
It just shouldn't be.
But they don't know any better. Yeah. And they don't. And they believe her because she's one of them.
Yes.
You understand?
Yeah. Even though she's taken in millions of dollars ever since she's been a congressperson, which has only been 2 years.
Yeah.
And she has, just put all of her campaign money to her own self and her husband. It's just, this is not a good example of anybody who should be in our government.
Okay. And we can take what's going on in Ilhan Omar's district and we can multiply that over all the districts that we see, because, you know, you talk about Black Lives Matter. Okay. And and I literally wrote the book.
All yes. Right?
And when you take a look at the rhetoric that these politicians use and that Black Lives Matter uses and the false narratives and the Marxist rhetoric and the anti-police rhetoric, you know, the four Ds, the distance, disengage, defund, and dissolve law enforcement, which we're seeing, that's what you're talking about. We're seeing that across the entire spectrum of the United States. The people are not able to wise up. And what happens is when you defund, as we've talked about on this show before, the people suffer. They're actually injured. They're killed as a result of the ignorance of following Black Lives Matter and of following people like Ilhan Omar and Tlaib and Patrice Couleurs from Black Lives Matter, Opal Tamati, you know, Alicia Garza, all the big players in Black Lives Matter. But they are the people that suffer.
Well, and speaking of Black Lives Matter and the three women that you just mentioned that started Black Lives Matter, that founded it, they are now being chastised by Black Lives Matter chapters all over the country.
Are you talking about the three founders?
Oh, the Black Lives Matter people have been given millions and probably billions of dollars in the last year and donations aplenty. Guess what? They have kept it.
Oh, sure they have.
They have not shared it among the chapters, and the chapters are pretty angry about
that. Well, and you know what? That's so funny, and I'm going to give my book a plug for a minute. It's called The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, and you can get it on my website at drronmartinelli.com, because it's not on Amazon anymore. Jeff Bezos, who's a BLM supporter, took it off. It'll say it's unavailable, but it is. It's not available on Amazon, but you can get it from Dr. Ron. But listen, in there, in one of the chapters, and you remember in the book, we talked about the complaints about Black Lives Matter taking the money, you know, from the organizations, and there is no trail about where that money is going to. And the people that went in, for instance, the rioters in Ferguson, the people that were the mercenary protesters that were promised all this money, never got the money. And one, as a matter of fact, and I don't remember which one it was, it's in the book, but they filed suit against MoveOn.org and also Black Lives Matter. So, but you know what, Linda, that's one of the problems in this country. And I have to chastise, you know, the Trump administration in one thing, and I'm a huge supporter of the president, as you know, but they are too scared to involve the Internal Revenue Service to take on these groups like Black Lives Matter. How come there has not been an audit, a tax audit of Black Lives Matter, when they've got about $1 billion in their coffers?
Okay. Right.
And that's due predominantly to corporate sponsors and also George Soros, but huge corporations like Amazon are financing them.
But yes, and they are keeping the money, and they're going to, I predict, have a lot of internal conflict, and that could end up, you know, destroying them in the long run, because that's what happens with greed.
But, you know, like I said in the book, follow the money.
Yes,
follow
exactly.
The money.
Yeah.
And I hope people pick up a copy of that book and learn a lot more about this militant Marxist organization that is going to be playing big time in the Obama, or actually the Biden Harris administration.
Well, and you say it right, Obama. Speaking of Obama, all of a sudden he's been out there a lot more visible. Now he's got a lot to say. And
he's got his book coming out. So he's like plugging his book.
His book just came out, and he's talking about, you know, how we greedy Americans love our gas guzzling cars and our cheap gas. Well, what does he drive, Ron?
You know, when I saw, thank you for bringing that up, when I saw that article today, because he's plugging his book left and right, now you hear what Obama really feels, what he really felt at the time, and we knew it all along. But he's chastising Americans because we won't give up our big gas-guzzling cars, but he doesn't drive at all, but he has the Secret Service car, which is beast number two. So beast number one protects our president of the United States, Donald Trump, and it weighs almost 10 tons. Okay, it weighs 9.9 tons because it's so heavily armored, and it gets about 5 miles to the gallon. All right, and it's at least 30 feet long. So you want to talk about a guy, and by the way, it's just not the Beast, because you got all those big Suburbans full of Secret Service guys that follow them all around, because you got to protect that particular former president of the United States so somebody doesn't kill him. And so there is nobody in the Obama family, trust me, nobody driving around in a Hyundai.
Oh, no. Well, and the daughters participated in the BLM protests, which, and former President Obama says he just couldn't be prouder. And I just couldn't be more horrified, because, again, that is a Marxist group seeking to change our entire country. And that is what he's proud of.
Well, let me tell you what, the fruit doesn't fall far from the tree.
No, that's true.
And they love their dad, and they want to emulate their dad, and they want to be social justice warriors. And don't forget, they've lived in the bubble of the White House and the bubble of, you know, very prestigious private schools. Okay. A very liberal, bringing up. They're nice girls. They're just extremely naive. Okay. You know, so you can't really, you know, blame them for that. They've been protected their entire lives. But don't forget that Obama's father was a Marxist.
Absolutely.
Okay. Living in a British colonial, you know, environment. And Obama, even though he pretty much abandoned Obama, if you remember.
Yes.
Okay. Because he was raised by the grandmother
in Hawaii.
That's exactly right. And so don't forget, when he came into power, and it's in my book, the whole Sergeant Crowley, Professor Gates thing, he's in office only 2 months, and he's already chastising law enforcement. This is a guy that doesn't like law enforcement.
No, he does not.
He doesn't like any type of authoritative, entity or agency, except for him when he was a non-transparent, basically tyrant in the United States. What more can you say, right? Except, how about our last cup of Kona coffee?
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Back with your steaming cup of Kona coffee.
I love Kona coffee.
Hey, listen, speaking of Hawaii, you and I had to jump through a few hoops to get out here to Hawaii because they are so concerned on the islands about COVID.
Yes.
And so, as a matter of fact, the governor has really clamped down the mayors of the different islands, because I don't know if people know, but every island is its own county, and that county is run by a mayor, right, and city council. And so pretty much the mayors control what goes on in the county, and the governor of Hawaii takes care of what goes on statewide, and they come down with these various edicts. And we're on the island of Kauai, and so the mayor and the governor had edicts that we had to follow, some very, very strict rules about COVID testing. And so we had to get a COVID test within no earlier right, than 72 hours before coming over to the island.
Before boarding our final flight to the islands.
That's right. And of course, we come out of Texas and we connected in Phoenix. And before we could get on the flight that went from Phoenix to Kauai, we had to show all of our papers, and it was electronic. We had it on our phone. We also had physical COVID test papers that, you know, certified us as being COVID free. And then we came over here and we've been fine, you know, over here as far as, you know, seeing things. But I'm telling you what, driving around the island, we've been here for just a few days, we've got a few more to go. And, you know, we come here all the time, by the way. It's a different island, wouldn't you say?
Well, it's definitely tourist season, and there's no tourists. So the tourists that are here, you know, oddly enough, it's a good news, bad news thing. It's very bad news for the island because their businesses are devastated. As far as being a tourist, I like having less people here. I can go into the restaurants and eat easily. And I actually like the tests, even though it was very difficult to accomplish, because you have to get the test from where they tell you to. You can't just go to your doctor and get a COVID test. You can only get it at certain places.
Two places.
Well, no, there's a lot of places on the list, but in Texas, there was only two places.
Well,
that's what I'm talking about.
But you know what? I want to just say something. Mm-hmm. My point is, I think Hawaii blew it. And let me tell you why. I think they should allow the test results from any medically certified place that does COVID testing. And they in Texas only allowed us to go to one of two places, which was extremely difficult for us to do.
And because it's because of the type of test that it has to be. And I forget
the initial result. You want instant result?
No, it didn't have to be an instant result. It had to be a certain type of test, and not everybody does that type of test. It's an NAA something test.
Okay, but what I meant for us, it had to be an instant test because we needed to get there within 3 days.
Well, yes, exactly. So it's difficult getting over to Hawaii. And if you're on the islands, people need to know that if you want to go from one island to another island, you have to do that whole test procedure all over again 3 days before you go. So let's say that you come over to Hawaii on a Saturday and you've had your test in the States and you've got all your documents, but now you want to fly to another island. Now, while you're on the first island, you have to get another test, and then you have to be certified before you board the plane for the other island. So we originally were going to go to two islands and we decided not to. It was just a total, you know, kind of pain in the neck to go through all that. It was actually a process to do it the way we did it anyway. We were both exhausted when we got to Hawaii after everything that we had to go through and a lot of waiting, but we got here. It's very quiet on Hawaii,
right.
Very non-touristy. And the mayor of Kauai shuts down the island from time to time, depending on how he sees COVID going. And if he thinks that there's getting too much, then he completely shuts it down from tourists and you'd have to quarantine. So at this time, as you and I are speaking, you would have to quarantine for 2 weeks, no matter if you had a positive test or not.
And they're getting ready to shut it down in a short period of time, right?
Right. So they do that intermittently. And what it does is the poor businesses, you know, they're up, they're down, they're up.
So they're allowing tourists to come, but then they've got to quarantine for 2 weeks, which means that when you come here, then you got to sit in your hotel room or your condo or whatever, your timeshare or whatever, and you got to sit around here for 2 weeks. Who's going to do that?
In your room.
In your room.
And you can't even leave your
room. No, exactly. So basically, anybody that would do that is nuts, all right? And you don't need to be here. But I will piggyback on something that you said, and that is, it's kind of nice to be here because very few cars, and by the way, Kauai is the least crowded, least populated of all the islands. And but you see a marked decrease in the amount of cars that are going around the island. and we're in a large resort. And I don't, have you seen 200 people here?
No, I don't think so.
And we got this gigantic swimming pool, which is usually fairly crowded and all the beach chairs are taken. And I think there was, what, 5 or 6 people in the pool today? And so you kind of have the whole place to yourself. That part of it's nice. Now, we can go to restaurants and everything like that. So it's not like restaurants that we normally go to are closed. They're open. But we have seen a lot of closures of restaurants, on the island.
Yeah, I think
so far.
Just like everywhere else, like every other city that continues to close down, people are losing their businesses in Hawaii, just as they are in Los Angeles and New York and all kinds of cities. And by the way, our favorite governor, Gavin Newsom, has said now that he is looking at completely locking everything down in California again. And I mean, people just, their businesses can't withstand that.
So, I mean, since we're on the island, I thought I'd just dig up some statistics and compare and contrast what's going on in the state of Hawaii and specifically in Kauai. So I don't know if people know that the overall population of the state of Hawaii with all of its different county islands is about 1.4 million people. And out of the 1.4 million people, to date, they've had 18,006 COVID cases, and they've had 242 deaths. So I ran the statistics, for the state. But you said to me, and you're right, you can't do it that way. You've got to do it according to the island.
Yeah.
So what I thought I'd do is I just picked two islands. I picked the most populous island, which is Oahu, and where Honolulu is. And I didn't know this. We've been coming here forever. But out of the 1.4 million, 953,207 people live on the island of Oahu, where
yes.
Honolulu is. And they had 15,444 COVID cases, and they had 190 deaths.
Yeah, and I think that's since they started measuring COVID cases.
That's right.
Cases.
So yeah. Let me give you the percentages really quick, and then I want to bounce to Kauai. So if you live in the island of Oahu or you visit the island of Oahu, your chances of contracting COVID are 0.016, and your chances of dying from COVID are 0.0001%. Okay, so that's pretty low. And then in Kauai, we've got 72,000 people here on this island, and we've had a total of 114 cases, and we've had one death. So your chances of contracting COVID on Kauai is 0.001%, and of dying is 0.0001%.
Well, and I feel pretty safe here. I still watch out because their biggest problem is people coming on planes from the States. And whether it's their own people that are traveling back and forth, which is what they indicate, or whether it's tourists, they still are bringing it home. So 114 people that they have had, but that has significantly increased from the 6 that they had just before we came. So they actually do have an upsurge in their numbers, and they don't have the medical facilities to take care of them.
There you go.
So that is why they're very careful, and they don't want to have them overrun so that they can't take care of people.
Yeah.
But we're having a great time in Hawaii. So I want to talk about 30 cities
that are the worst cities to live in the United States.
Okay. I want to hear them.
Well, it won't surprise you at all to talk about like the first, 6 or 7 cities, because they're all cities that we talk about all the time on Talking While Married. They're some of the most violent cities in the entire United States. So the cities that are the worst cities to live in are like Baltimore and, St. Louis and Milwaukee and Minneapolis and Cleveland and Cincinnati. I mean, Los Angeles, Detroit. These are, they're all, and when you Gary, Indiana, I mean, there's a lot just of these 30 cities, it's all the same theme. Okay. Why are they the worst cities? Well, coincidentally, and I don't think it's coincidentally at all, because I'm like one of those guys that says, hey, what are the chances? In all 30 cities that are the worst cities to live in the United States, they are all governed by Democrats. Every single one of them. Every single one of these cities has an exorbitantly high crime rate, violent crime rate, gun crime rate, and homicide crime rate. In double, and in a couple of cities, triple digit increases in gun violence and homicides over just last year.
Wow. I don't even know what to say other than that it just tells people that they've got to change who they're voting for. It makes a difference. When you look at, I think that today, just coincidentally, you told me that you looked at some of the best cities to live in, and a lot of those were in Texas. Was that?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I just read something from, I believe it was Business Week magazine, and they were talking about the safest cities in the United States. And it was really interesting to note that the state of Texas, where we're from, has the number one safest city in the United States, which is Plano, Texas. And by the way, that's where the big Toyota plant is in the United States, is in Plano. And so they talked about not only does it have a low crime rate, but it has better income. It's just a happier place to be. There are thriving businesses. And also, the COVID statistics are very, very low. It's one of the lowest COVID statistics cities in the United States per capita. So there's a lot of good reasons for that. You know, going back for a second to the cities that are the worst cities, it isn't just violent crime. And you and I tend to talk about violent crime a lot, but it's also the poverty rates. So the poverty rates are really high. Okay, so a lot of people in poverty, lack of education, marketable job skills. You know, it's these things that all contribute.
So is it a chicken or an egg situation? Is the Democrat not doing enough for the people? Or did the Democrat get in because the people were, you know, the type of people that vote for Democrats to get handouts? I mean, I don't know if it's a chicken or egg situation, but the fact that they're all governed by Democrats is really interesting.
Well, you know, as an educator, you know, all my life, part-time educator and full-time for some years, all my life, I find that there is a symbiotic relationship between socioeconomics, education, and crime. Okay, so when the socioeconomic level is down, when people don't value education, when they come from a single parent, you know, families, when, again, education, obtaining meaningful job skills, that is not encouraged in the children, then they grow up and they just stay in abject poverty because they don't have the education, because that was never stressed. They don't have the marketable job skills because that was never stressed. And so they can't move out of the high density, high crime rate, impoverished inner cities and even rural areas where there is abject poverty. They can't move out because they've got nothing that allows them to rise up, you know, out of poverty. And when they do that, then they get into problems with gangs and they get into problems with drugs and substance abuse and self-medication. And of course, many of those people get involved in violent crime and they become victims of violent crime.
Do you know what I think would be a really cool seminar to have? Would be get those 30 governors.
Mayors.
Those 30 mayors and put them in a room with the 30 mayors from the best 30 best cities and see what they can't come up with to make their cities better.
Well, you know, and that's a great idea. I think altruistically, it's a great idea. But I think one of the problems, Linda, with that is that they're in these cities, and I followed these cities, and I have cases in many of these cities, there is systemic poor leadership in these cities.
And you're exactly right. And a perfect example, Ron, is New York City. When Rudy Giuliani took over New York City as mayor, he turned it around. And he did it by a lot of different measures. These cities can also be turned around, but it takes the heroic courage from somebody who is not there just to make a dime or whatever it is that they're doing there, because obviously it's not a lot. I mean, you take some of these mayors who are absolutely disasters for their constituents. What I'm saying is, if somebody is truly interested in helping the people in their community, as I'm sure they campaigned on, then get them with people that have done it right and, you know, help them learn how to do that.
Well, you know, great idea again, but what you find is these people are completely in denial. Look at the mayor of Chicago. You know, we've talked about the violence rate in Chicago, and she is completely in denial of what is going on in that city, as have been the last two mayors that preceded her. And so rather than, you know, encouraging it, like you said, having the heroic courage to get people to pull themselves up and offer some meaningful programs, she would rather defund her police department, you know, and she would rather pick on the police. I mean, that's the dog that she kicks,
yeah,
you know, very, very frequently. And I think as long as you have that mindset, these cities are never going to get better. And you feel so sorry for the people in these cities, because a lot of people do want to do better, but they're just stuck where they are.
Yeah.
And they can't get out.
Well, we will continue this tomorrow on another day in Hawaii.
Well, that sounds great. Aloha.
Aloha.